You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
What is up, Launch Street? Another beautiful day to learn something new, maybe even think differently. So today I interview Jay Peters, and I actually heard him on another podcast that I love called Everyday Innovators. I've actually been interviewed on there as well. And I wanted to talk to him because he's an expert in this area. I wanted to learn more about not just innovation, but design thinking and design management. Get a richer understanding of what that means and how that applies to innovation on an everyday basis. There's a lot of talk about, you know, design-centric processes and thinking and management. So I wanted to bring that to us so that we could tap the power of that cutting-edge concept that I'm starting to see implemented across my clients and in the world of innovation. So Jay is a managing director at Park USA and a leading expert in innovation and design management. We dig into a lot of different areas on this podcast. A couple things I'd highlight that really stood out to me is, you know, he had said at one point, you can't not have an experience. Your customers can't not have an experience. And we dug into how that the implication there is that every touch point matters and every touch point should have an element of design thinking to it. And we also talked about how design thinking helps you innovate on an everyday level. And it's not just about the outcome, but it's how you approach things as well. It helps you there. You'll learn more in the conversation too. So let's get ready to rumble. Well, I am thrilled for today's interview. Today, I have Jay here with me. Jay, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So this is an interesting field, this whole design management. So let's start by defining design management from your perspective so that we can actually move forward together.
Sure. Try and keep it simple. There's a few different, let's say, leading definitions around the profession of design management. The first one is more of an executional role, and that is just the deployment of design resources to execute a strategy, a design strategy that is connected to a corporate or business strategy. So essentially, that is the how, that what needs to get done, why. So the why is the strategy, the what is the deliverable, design management is the how, the orchestration of that, the deployment. But that's just a more of the executional role. For us, what's more interesting is the role of design management, or defining it as kind of the orchestration of all the multiple touch points in a consumer or brand experience. So everything has to be designed to be interacted, whether that's a advertising campaign, a product, a packaging, a service, etc. So design management is kind of orchestrating or connecting all those touch points from a consumer-centric perspective to make sure that at the end, the experience is most desirable, enjoyable by that end user, the customer, or the consumer.
Before you go on, I want to dig into that customer touch points, because I think that is so important to the success of your brand and your business, whether you are an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur. And really, with entrepreneurs, you know, you only have so many resources, so your touch points better work. And for a big brand, an intrapreneur that owns a department or a brand, you know, you want to have consistency out in the marketplace. I'm curious from your perspective, because there are so many touch points, probably more than we typically think of. What are some of the touch points that we tend to miss? I mean, we all, you know, sales, marketing, packaging, like we get those. But what are the other ones that you would include that maybe would make me go, oh, I didn't think of that?
I think one of the main ones that's overlooked is service. Mm. And, you know, the question, the million-dollar question is, you know, where does design drive or influence, or where is kind of a no-go? So does design have any influence in customer service? It should. And I think a good example of that, and I try not to have too many examples, but they're still very much leading, is Apple. If you look at the Genius Bar, they actually deliver something that is called behavior design. So when you go and you interact with these people at the Genius Bar, that whole interaction, the way they behave, their tone of voice, that's all is all designed. And that's a very strong enabler of that brand, that service. And I think service, whether it's a call center, whether it's in store, online, that's usually what's overlooked. We talk about touch points, but what we say is you should look for the ouch points. So where is those touch points where it's not very well designed or delivered, which gives the customer an ouch, or let's say the weakest link in the chain, that really then you need to focus and make sure that it is an overall good holistic experience.
So do you have an example of that? Because it made me go, ooh, like I wonder where in my business I have ouch points.
You know, every business is different, but if you go through a whole customer journey from just initial awareness to education, influence, all that happens before you even decide to buy a product or service. Usually that's something that is overlooked or underutilized because you have to convince the consumer, however, that it's the right purchase or brand to get into. And then it's usually after the fact, service or usage or disposal. Most people think, okay, we have a product or service. How do we best sell it? We focus on the product, maybe the packaging, maybe point of sale. That's usually the focus, but they don't look at the additional surrounding touch points.
Yeah, it's amazing how many we miss. So why should an organization make design management a priority? What's the actual value it brings?
Going back to the touch points and the definition, design management, when it's properly deployed or integrated in an organization, it can and should ensure a enjoyable, desirable, holistic brand experience. That, of course, creates a better brand awareness, better brand desirability or recommendation, which ultimately will drive the revenue, the bottom line of a company. You know, in the organization, we work with a lot of large global multinationals. You know, the question is always who's responsible for the overall experience or the brand. You have marketing and you have R&D and engineering and procurement and everything, but we believe that design management is that orchestration, that role that really has the best interest of the consumer and the company at hand that will connect all these touch points.
So who is that person? Is that someone with design, like true design skills, or is that someone with, you know, customer research, customer voice experience? Who should be that person that infuses it across?
Well, for us, most design management roles are filled by people coming from a design background. And I use design loosely. It could be development, a technical development and engineering, but somebody who really understands how to take an idea to fruition all the way to marketplace. But it's not just an idea. It's all the different ideas across all the different experiences. So ideally, they have a development design background. But there are some exceptions to the rules where we've seen successful design managers coming from, let's say, different or ancillary backgrounds. Couple come to mind. We know a lady that came from HR, and she didn't know much about design or development, but she really knew how to empower and work with people. We also know a lady that came from marketing, and she was very strong in packaging and brand. She didn't know much about else, but she really had a strong understanding of brand experience across the whole touch point. So there's no right or wrong, black or white, but majority of time it is somebody, again, with a design or development background.
So I watched a video, I think it was a speaking engagement that you did, and you talked about how fast design moves and that there's some really interesting things coming. First of all, I just want to back up and ask, I mean, I know that we talk a lot in innovation about everything being rapid change and, you know, things shifting all the time, but I'd love to hear from your perspective why you think design moves so quickly.
Yeah, there's a couple influencing factors there. The first one is obviously technology. Technology is evolving so fast, and not sure how well your listeners are aware of, but a new discipline that's rather just recently emerging, Can be argued where it comes from originally, but the whole role of UX or user experience.
Yeah, UI,
designers,
UX.
Mm-hmm. UI, UX. So that is now kind of, I say, adopted by the digital industry. And again, technology, digital is very new and evolving. So design is, you know, finding its role and influence in technology. There's also globalization. And it's becoming very much a global marketplace, even commoditized in some regards. So design is helping step up across the globe and helping products that are commoditized have a differentiating value through design. And also inside companies and corporations, design is getting much more roles and responsibilities. And that is evident through the recent role, or let's say the chief design officer. So now design has a seat at the table and business is saying, okay, what can design do to help us grow and serve our market or create new markets? So now design has to do more and pick up the pace a little bit. So it is also accelerating its role in organizations and industries.
What are some of the big things that you think are coming in design?
Well, interesting. There's a couple of things that are evident now and a few things that we predict are coming. The one thing that's interesting for us is design itself is becoming consolidated and commoditized. A lot of design agencies are being acquired into bigger enterprises. So a lot of global advertising or consultancies are buying up these design agencies and bringing them under that corporate umbrella or veil, which is, you could argue, good and bad with pros and cons. So that'll be interesting to see how design really keeps true to the heart of being creative with the best interests of the consumer or customer at mind and not the business and the P&L at mind. That's specifically for design, but some things that we see coming in the industry in general that design has definitely a big influence on is one thing that was predicted many years ago, and this is called the purpose economy. So a lot of companies now are really trying to define what is their purpose. They are a business, and their purpose, of course, is to make money for the business and the shareholders, et cetera, but that's not enough anymore. So businesses are now, what is their true purpose? How do they help the environment? How do they help the economy, social influence, corporate social responsibility? So design is helping to drive the purpose of a company. And then also lastly, a little more related to design, we see something coming to fruition right now or rising to the surface called circular design, which ties a little bit back into the environment or responsibility. So designing for a complete life cycle. So, you know, everything is designed to be obsolete or planned obsolescence. It's only going to last so long and then you just throw it away. Well, we're all conscious now. What happens afterwards? Is it have a second life? Is it recycled? Or is it a product that will last a lifetime? And that's becoming more prevalent or designed to help companies deliver around those regards.
Do you think with circular design, because when I think about innovation, oftentimes, in some ways you're trying to make yourself obsolete because if you don't, somebody else will. Mm-hmm. So you want to constantly evolve and change, right? Do you think that that circular design, like how does that play in? What are we going to see more of because of that? Because that, I mean, ultimately, and you must see this with your clients, really does shift how you think about what you bring to market and ultimately its death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So innovation is about evolution or revolution. So constantly changing that. You know, for example, for something circular design, if you make a product that has a indefinite shelf life, meaning you can use it your whole life, well, that's not good for business because, of course, they can't continue to sell you the same thing.
What are they going to sell you?
You have it. But that does create an opportunity for innovation around other areas, for example, business innovation, so business model innovation. So maybe they only sell you one product, but now they can sell you services.
I see.
That is an innovation. somewhat connected to design, also business and everything else. But so the real innovation wouldn't be the product, would be more around a service or subscription or business.
So I just want to take a pause for the listeners out there in Launch Street and what you're saying, because I think it's so important if I hear you right, which is, it's not just does your product live and die in the kind of, you know, organic, so to speak, life cycle of your product, but also if you've done that, then how can you innovate in other elements of your business as well?
Absolutely.
So interesting. You said something in another video I watched that I really appreciated that I want to dig into, because this is another one of those, I think, overlooked things and yet a bit of a competitive advantage if you get in the right mindset. You said you can't not have an experience. Why does that matter in business?
Well, at the end of the day, yeah, you cannot not have an experience. You're going to live your life and the end of the day, reflect on that experience. And if it's around a company, a brand, a product, a service, you're either going to have a positive, good experience or not a good experience. And that is directly going to influence the success or failure of your business. And back to the first couple of questions. So it's important that the brand experience is orchestrated, designed, and delivered to be as most successful, whatever that means, enjoyable, desirable, to give a good experience. I always love, and I quote the saying from Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and he says that your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Yeah, that's great.
So at the end of the day, you come back from, you know, shopping or using a service, whatever, and somebody, you know, and you talk about it. Well, you're going to be honest and you're going to talk about that experience, that brand or product experience. And again, it's going to be positive or negative, which will directly influence your business positive or negatively.
You know, I'm going to throw one of my favorite brands under the bus for a second, because I love them, but I think they, to what you're saying, I think they kind of dropped the ball on the back end. So I love Tough Mudder, all the extreme sports competitions, yeah. Right? So for those out there listening who don't know, it's, you know, usually about 12 to 16 miles, about 20-ish military style obstacle courses. It's insane. I love them. The experience is leading up to the event, and the event itself is phenomenal. The customer service after or in the meantime, it is as if the two don't meet. Mm-hmm. And it, like, one arm is not talking or one hand is not talking to the other. And I think that's kind of what you're saying. It is like somebody somewhere, and I hope you're listening to this if you work at Tough Mudder, because I love you, but it's like somebody somewhere didn't think about there's an experience there. Just because they paid doesn't mean their need for a good experience goes away.
Absolutely. And this kind of goes back to the whole cliche about working in silos. And that's typically how a lot of these experiences are developed and delivered, in silos. So a department does the marketing, a department does the product, a department does the service.
Right.
They don't talk. And at the end, they don't connect. There's not a holistic experience. And one of them, again, is an ouch point that they're maybe not fully aware of, because they're not from a consumer-centric standpoint and understanding, okay, what was the overall experience? What was good? Great. But what was not good? And how can we improve that? And does that, do all those experiences line up with our brand promise, our brand values, our brand positioning, et cetera?
Yeah, and I think you really nailed it when you said that quote from Jeff Bezos, because as I was saying the other day to someone, you know, if you think you own the narrative of your brand, you're wrong. The marketplace does. And if you're not sure about that, just ask United and Pepsi what's going on for them.
Yeah,
I'll show you. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think in today's two-way communication, social media, that becomes even more amplified, you know, than it did before. Now you're not in the room, but you see what they say, which is a whole nother level. And, you know, so you mentioned innovation. How does design help or not help in driving innovation?
Yeah. So innovation is a big word. Sometimes it's a loaded word or subject in large corporations or not, even in smaller SMEs. So first of all, let me say that innovation is not, let's say, led by design. It can be driven by design, but innovation can and should come from everywhere. It should come from technology, from R&D. It should come from marketing, from procurement, manufacturing, logistics, et cetera. So innovation is the responsibility of many, but particularly for design, design can help by driving innovation from a user perspective. We say it's outside in versus inside out. So what I mean by that is a lot of times innovation is done through a microscope or in a laboratory. They have a great technical breakthrough, and then they have to find out an application to the market, which may or may not fit, versus design using some of its methodologies and attributes to focus on the consumer and maybe find an unmet need or an unmet opportunity in the marketplace or from an experience, and then helping to drive forward a solution through that, through a nice design or innovation process.
So let me ask you this, because this is, it's percolating in my head, which means it's probably percolating in the heads of some of the innovators out there in our community. You know, if I let's say I buy into design thinking and design management, which I definitely do. I didn't mean that as a question, more of a like, yeah, okay, I'm there. I can't afford the IDEOs and these other companies in the world that, you know, we see on the cover of Fast Company for, you know, pushing design forward in all the things that they do. So how do I and my company, and whether that's because maybe I'm in B2B, maybe I'm in nonprofit, maybe I'm like, you know, in an unsexy category like tractor sales, I don't know what. How do I get this into my organization?
You know, it sounds very generic, but the first step is really just understanding and awareness. So what is it when we talk about design and innovation? And not in general, because you'll just confuse yourself. And if you go and Google design thinking or whatever design strategy, you're going to get, you know, millions of hits. What's important for us and which we help our clients is to define what is that for you? What does design mean for you or innovation? And what does it not mean for you? Because in every company, every industry, every culture, it's going to be different. So it's very important that you are aware of the differences, and then you define what that means for you. That's the first step. And then, of course, you then have to have a strategy to move forward. What is the vision that you want to create for your product, brand, or services? And then what is the roadmap? What are some enablers you need to do over the short, mid, and long term to start to drive forward?
What do you think are some of the bottlenecks or roadblocks that you know, you've seen your clients bump into in the design management journey?
Usually roles and responsibilities. It's not always clear who's responsible for what and what is design's role in the overall, you know, development or delivery of all the different touch points. And it's also about, you know, resources. Design is often sometimes seen as a frivolous or additional resource that's just, you know, maybe not needed. You know, let's reduce the design spend. Let's just go with the cheapest agency. We really don't need, you know, that nice of a product feature or packaging. It's just really, let's invest the money in sales and marketing. And it's about, you know, prioritization and leadership. If leadership believes in design, they're going to make sure design has adequate resources, not just money, but also people and time to do that. And if they don't, they're a sales-centric organization, then they're going to, you know, outsource design, and design is kind of seen down the road as just a decoration station. You know, do whatever, make it look pretty, but it's really about sales, marketing, and pushing the marketplace.
What would you say to companies that are in the ones I alluded to earlier, the B2B space or the, like, you know, quote unquote non-sexy categories? And the reason I'm asking is, you know, I hear that I'm a firm believer in design and its ability to elevate innovation as well as elevate, to your point, that customer experience, which I think is crucial for success in the marketplace. But I get this pushback from companies in those spaces that say, well, we're different, right? We're not a Disney. We're not a Zappos. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not a Coca-Cola. What is your thoughts to them on why this matters so much and why it can be your competitive advantage? Because I think it can, but I'd love to hear. I mean, you're the expert here, so.
Sure. We have a lot of clients that are B2B, and that's a question. You know, we're not consumer facing. We sometimes, they sell a piece of equipment that goes in a cabinet that nobody sees, and why invest in design? And the answer is because I don't know where the saying comes from, but the saying is, if your industry is not commoditized yet, it soon will be. Because going back to globalization, every product and service on the market, can be pretty easily copied. And then it becomes a price competition. Most people can make a quality product or service, and the competition is just going to undercut the price, and then somebody undercuts them to the point where there's no margins left. You're not making money. You're maybe giving things away. So design can help elevate you to having that premium brand positioning, that perception through design. And it's not just the aesthetics, but also the usability and so forth, that can command a premium price. So then people look at you and say, okay, well, I need to buy this. It's a commodity. I can buy whatever at whatever price, but I want something that is going to last, that is going to be of high quality. And that is very important in B2B.
And do you think, too, that it helps add a chasm between you and the competition? You know, it's a place they can't as easily go to when you have something well designed from the customer perspective and more ownable.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things design does is to drive differentiation and create a competitive advantage. The more elements you can design, the more sustainable competitive advantage you have. Now, what happens in all industries, we see it. Somebody comes out with something that's great, whether that's B2C or B2B, and then everyone copies them. They start to look the same shape and the same color and the same size. Well, a design led company realizes this, they're always one step ahead of the competition. So just when the competition is catching up to them, they're then leapfrogging ahead and coming out with a new design that keeps them in that position they want to be.
I mean, I'm assuming Apple probably fits into that, although a little less lately, I feel like, than in past days. But are there other brands or businesses that you can look to and say they are always leapfrogging ahead? And, you know, something that we can look at and say, well, that's a great example that I can then think about for my world.
Yeah, I think one industry in general that's very interesting is consumer goods. In the U.S., we call it consumer packaged goods. Over in Europe, we call it fast-moving consumer goods. And fast-moving is everything. It's fast-moving off the shelf, but it's also fast-moving in the design, the positioning, the aesthetics. If you look at a company like Unilever and you look at one of their leading brands, Axe, Axe is always reinventing itself every season.
It's true.
It's a different color. It's a different shape. And why do that? Because if you think about all the capital expenditure that has to go into retooling and rebranding and redoing everything, it's the same product more or less on the inside. Yes, they come out with new scents, but there's, you know, those evergreen scents. It's still the same scent or shampoo or whatever they're offering. But it really, you know, keeps them fresh in that marketplace. And there are some other competitors that are usually, you know, following them. So Axe comes out in all black, and then next season everyone else is black. But you know what? Next season Axe is white, and right, then everyone's white, and then now they're purple and they're round and square. And so that's a good example of, you know, staying one step ahead.
You know, they really are. And that's such a great example. I never really thought about them in that way, although I have a 12-year-old, you know, very quickly about to turn 13 on my hand. So I'm getting very familiar with Axe and all of those products. But I love that example because their brand, they've stayed true to their brand values. So they're not confusing the marketplace, but they're constantly ahead of their competition and inviting more kind of unexpected energy and excitement into the marketplace. Wouldn't you say that's a little bit how they do it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is true to that brand. You know, it's young, it's fresh, it's evolving, it's never static. So it's okay that they really disrupt it because people know to look for something versus a traditional brand. I don't say it anymore because they change, but Old Spice. I mean, Old Spice, you expect to have the same color and the same logo for a whole generation. And if it changed, you freak out. Is this still the same product? It doesn't look like what I've been buying for 10 years. That's changed because that whole brand actually reinvented itself and tried to capture this younger market. And you see them kind of doing a little bit of what Axe is doing and being, you know, evolutionary and also changing their brand positioning and their messaging, et cetera.
You know, I just want to take a second and let this conversation sink in for the listeners because, you know, the whole thing around, I can't remember exactly how you said the quote, but about if you're not commoditized, you will be. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, through my head time and time again, I'm thinking of these amazingly innovative companies that launched new categories that then got saturated. I mean, Tough Mudder launched extreme sports. Now there's Spartan. Now there's Mudderella. Now there's all these different things, you know. I think it's Naked that launched the whole, you know, fresh smoothie thing, which is now just cluttered with more brands than I can even think of. I mean, if you go to the grocery store, I think that's a great, over 6 months, it's a great way to look at, you know, what's happening in any category. But it's so important what you're saying about design helping lead to that competitive advantage and continually innovating in that space in all aspects of your business, really, to keep ahead, because you just can't rest on your laurels anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very important. So,
you know, since we're kind of laddered it back to innovation, how does design management play into creating a culture of innovation?
Design management can help a few ways. And culture is a very big word. We have a lot of clients that want to be more creative or more innovative. Again, going back to what I said earlier, well, the first thing is define what does that mean for you and what does it not mean for you. Design management, it is what it sounds. It's the management of design, and management, as you said, I like to say it's the non-sexy side of design.
Yeah.
And it's really about people, process, tools, and training. So design management brings that into place to make sure that the right people have the right process and tools to drive innovation, the right training and awareness to bring that forward. And, you know, the larger the organization, we call it the oil tanker, the larger it is, the longer it's going to take to steer and turn in that direction. Of course, if it's a young startup with not a lot of history or bureaucracy, they can really create a culture pretty fast. But design helps, design management per se, helps come in and professionalize that. It's interesting for us because a lot of the times, our projects, our change management programs, and it's really the culture that needs to change. And the reason it takes so long to change, which is usually 3 to 5 years, is because the culture has to unlearn how they have been doing things, how they have been thinking for the last 5, 10, 40 years. Sometimes people have been in that role in organization for decades. So sometimes it may take 1, 2, or 3 years to just start fresh with a clean palate, and then to start to adopt that new culture.
And, you know, I think it's so interesting. You can almost sense or feel a culture when you walk into an organization, whether it's buzzing and energized and there's collaboration, or there's a little bit of high stress. What's leadership's mood today? I mean, can't you just almost feel it when you walk in?
Oh, absolutely. We visit all kinds of companies around the globe of all, well, mostly larger organizations, but they all have global headquarters of different sizes. And you can sense a culture within the first 5 minutes, of course, just from the, let's say, the gut feeling of, you know, the energy. Is it a cubicle culture? Is it an open, creative workspace? And it's not about, I always kind of kid around, it's not about, you know, throwing around beanbags and parking a bus in the lobby and
table.
Now you're a creative culture, because we've actually seen this not working in some companies where they have this open environment. You know, there are no cubicles, there are no assigned seats. You just come in and pick a seat. Well, that doesn't always necessarily work. And sometimes that's counterintuitive to be creative, et cetera. So it really comes down to the company culture of what's needed or not needed, and then design to bring that forward from a management standpoint, and then also deploying that, making sure that the environment aesthetically, and emotionally is built out to support that cultural vision.
I'm wondering if you have one or two questions that you can arm our listeners with to have more of a design mindset. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, what does the customer think about this? How would the customer experience this? You know, I mean, what are the questions, one or two, that our listeners can go out and go, okay, I'm gonna at least try to move towards this design thinking, design management, you know, before we get our chief design officer. What can I do to make sure I'm thinking about that in everything we do?
That's a great question. So one thing I want to say is, you know, design is a very powerful enabler of business, but it's not the be all end all. We always draw a triangle, and on each of the corners, we put design, brand, and innovation. And we always ask a company or a client, what is really driving your company or your industry? Is it design? Is it a design-led company? Or is it really from a brand perspective? Or is it really from innovation? You need all three, but usually one is leading over the others, again, depending on the company, the culture, the context, et cetera. So that's the first question. Just be honest with yourself. You do need design, but is it really going to lead and drive, or is it really a brand-driven company, which is more marketing communication that, of course, needs to be designed, or is it really innovation from technology, et cetera? I would say from a design standpoint, you know, one of the things that designers do is this thing called empathy, of put yourself in the shoes of your user. We have a lot of clients who have never experienced their product. We have
it's crazy.
Engineers who have never talked to a customer or never seen their product on a shelf. I always give a very good example of most people should be familiar with the company Philips.
Yeah.
Philips does all kinds of technology, lighting and radios and hair dryers and everything. And many years ago, they came out with a campaign called Sense and Simplicity. And basically that came to being by the head of design influencing the board of directors that design needs to do something to enable a better experience from the end users, the customers and consumers. And basically all they did was they gave the board of directors some products to use. They said, go home for the weekend, come back, tell us your experience Monday. They all came back on Monday and they basically said, this is shit. Who designed these products? This is terrible, because they had never used it. So now they, right. You know, it wasn't PowerPoints and arguing. They really put themselves on the end of the users and said, this is not fun. Something is not right. We need to fix this. What can we do? And so that made sense and simplicity. You know, this goes back to the whole, blinking VCR. Made sense to somebody, but nobody knows how to fix that or use it. So, you know, be conscious of that.
It's such great advice for Launch Street out there, of use your own products. Whether you are an entrepreneur or at a, multi-global company, you're absolutely right. It is always amazing to me, and same in the innovation space we play in, of how many people haven't experienced their own product. And the insight that you get from putting yourself on the other, in the other person's shoes, it's so powerful. And, I love the word that you used, empathy, which is such a great trigger for new thinking that we often lose sight of because, we're at our desks all day.
Yeah. And the other advice I would say is, everything has its place in business, but don't rely on focus groups too much because they usually tell you the answer they think you want to hear. And that is not always necessarily the right answer. Go with your intuition. And if you experience it from yourself, from a consumer perspective, even if you're not the right target or demographic, you have a true understanding of some areas that can be improved for a better experience. And again, make sure it's across the whole user experience, not just, picking up and using it, but how you open the packaging, how you see it on the shelf, what happens if you have a problem, how do you get information? Everything, start to finish.
Yeah, we could probably do a whole nother podcast on why focus groups suck. That's a whole nother conversation, because I'm 100% with you on that. Where can people go online to learn more about you, your company, what you do?
Sure. We have a main site, and that is www.empowering.design. It's a .design domain. Okay. From there, it gives a brief introduction of how we help empower design through our three different services. We have a consultancy where we help design and innovation leaders. We have an education program where we teach working professionals how to better manage and lead design and innovation. And then we have a small networking event that we bring design leaders together to help consult, coach, and challenge each other on similar challenges in different industries. So empowering.design will take you to the main site. Then you can branch off and find different services that may be of interest to you, the listeners.
Excellent. So my last question for you is, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? A hobby, passion, experience?
Good question. I love it. We do a lot of events, and I always tell people it's a little cheesy, but after your standard introduction, what is a fun fact? I think for me, it's always surprising. A fun fact, it's really surprises myself when I say it, but if I look back over the last 22 years, I think last count, I've moved 44 times.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm a part-time professional mover, which is good. Sometimes it's just in the same town to a different area for different reasons, being a consultant, being on the road, et cetera. That's part of it. But I moved a lot, but I've learned to embrace change and learning from the different experiences and perhaps the cultures that I come across.
Okay, so I have to ask then, do you have a minimalist lifestyle? Because how do you pack up all that stuff?
Yeah,
all that often.
I do have a minimal lifestyle. I've moved in the U.S. a few times, and basically, if it didn't fit in my SUV, I didn't own it. And then I moved abroad, and if it didn't fit in two large suitcases, I didn't own it. And it's somewhat liberating. You know, the grass is always greener. You know, I wish I had an apartment full of nice furniture that I own, but it's also nice. I don't own furniture and I can just pick up and be wherever in a day or two with just some small possessions. So
I love it. I have this whole vision of just getting rid of everything in my house and having a few things. But I have kids and a dog and a husband who might disagree with me. So we'll see what happens. But Jay, thank you so much. And I really think that this helped us expand our thinking about innovation and the role of design and to hopefully take that perspective of design management and the customer touch point a little more seriously and make it more of a priority within our businesses, because it's, to your point, truly a competitive advantage to do so.
Yeah, I really love the talk, and I hope for your listeners that they found some inspiration, if not some potential information to help drive their brands forward.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.